Hi, I'm Kate. Thank you for allowing me to tell my story, and thank you all for supporting our recovery through your presence and your service. I've told my story many times in other programs, but never before have I stood before an audience so naked and raw. So I'm going to start with a prayer that God will give me the words and the love that will offer some healing to each of you and so enlighten you that you can go out and heal others. Because that's the beauty of our disease. Our pain has given us incredible strength and courage and empathy and desire to lessen the suffering of our fellow travelers. I thank God that my life can be redeemed by building up yours, and that together we can carry this message to the poor, hurting world out there that hungers so much for what we offer. Love is the most powerful healing force in the universe. Period. The end. I'm nervous, but I can read, so that's what I can offer. That's simply the best I can do today, given the depth of the long-suppressed pain I am confronting and sharing with you tonight. Writing my story has spotlighted the entire kaleidoscope of my character defects and laundry list traits. This last month is the first time in my life that I've been safe enough to, in a setting, to allow myself to face the suppressed feelings that I've been carrying all my life. I've done 60 years of feeling in 4 weeks, so of course it's been overwhelming to go from totally numb to a pincushion. It feels awful, all falling apart. I grew up in Dallas, Texas, fourth of six children born to parents whose ancestors had been pioneers and community leaders, trailblazing lawyers, county judges, entrepreneurs. Both families were successful by external standards and both also rife with alcoholism. As a child, I believed I enjoyed safety and security, that all my needs were met, that my life was perfectly normal. What my psyche had to deny in order to survive was legion. Denial may be my most powerful addiction. Through adult eyes, I can see that my alcoholic mother was psychotically ill, both a narcissist and a raging sadist. Her depravity commanded such might that she successfully shut down and emasculated my father, and she severely damaged each of her children. Nothing any of us could do or achieve was ever good enough. My entire existence has been a lifelong struggle to survive and overcome the blackness in which I was smothered day after day. I will never know or understand how her personality became so tragically destructive. My father retreated primarily to his office, where he provided for his family abundantly, and secondarily to his church and charities, in which he participated generously and effectively. A pillar in the community, at home he was a mere cipher, unwilling or unable to stand up to the evil emanating from his life partner. In an effort to minimize my mother's stress, he provided means for lots of household servants who, between their other duties, provided most of the attention and protection we children received. Their presence provided the gift of our mother's absence from our life. Other than providing human buffers and goodness and morality, my father failed to protect his children from psychological damage from their mother. And yet I idolized him. He was the finest man I ever knew. When he died of cancer, when I was in my late 20s, I cried daily for a year, not knowing how I could go on living without him. It took 33 more years until my mother died at 90 for me to be able to face my anger at my father's abdication of his duty to protect me. Because as long as my evil mother lived, I needed to believe in the fantasy of a good parent. Our family attended church regularly. I sang in the choir, my brothers served as altar boys, my father served on the vestry, my mother served the altar guild. We knelt in a circle nightly to say the Lord's Prayer, but there was such a disconnect between the message at church and the message at home that the deepest part of me could not believe there was a God who loved me unconditionally. when my parent gods so clearly could not. My mother ran the house like a Nazi general, with strict and flexible rules and zero tolerance for deviation. Severe punishment was meted out with anger. There were no displays of any kind of affection from either parent, bodily or verbally. We were not kissed, hugged, cuddled, nurtured emotionally in any way. We children were chattel, useful only to buttress a necessary image. My mother was a social and an intellectual snob, and she claimed she was genetically superior. One night when she was deep in her cups, my mother allowed that she had never felt better and more whole than when she was pregnant, perhaps due to hormones. But once we were born, she admitted, she lost interest. My brother T was a colicky baby, and she never forgave him for it. After a particularly trying day, T said he wished he had never been born. My mother replied, "That is the first thing the two of us have ever agreed upon." She told that story on herself because the bully in her got the last word, and it proved her more clever and witty than her young son. He became an alcoholic and a prescription drug addict and never overcame the identity she gave him as despicable and unwanted. None of the external trappings of a successful career and later master's in divinity could revive him from the soul murder inflicted in his formative years. When my depressed, alcoholic oldest brother was going through a seemingly impossible divorce, my mother told him it would be okay to kill himself. 2 days later, he blew his brains out, leaving his 8-year-old son orphaned. My older sister became a clone of my mother, using her manipulations and her vicious words to wound. My next brother entered a religious cult for 10 years and never returned to the fold. My youngest brother never made it through high school and was financially and emotionally dependent on my mother his entire life. He and my sister won my mother's favor by never abandoning her by marrying and having families of their own. And they made up fantastical stories about how wonderful and fine a person she was. Pure Looney Tunes. When we were children, my mother's tongue was so vicious, she rarely needed to resort to physical means to maintain her control. I was told by siblings that she put out her cigarette butts on my sister's arms, and she took an occasional whack at us with her brush. There is some talk among siblings that she sexually molested my two oldest brothers, but she could crush us instantly with a word. I have repressed all memory of her words directed at me as a youngster. Those directed at me as an adult after I was safely out of her home are burnt into memory, and I want to slap her senseless every time I recall one, but I never uttered a word, knowing her bitterness would only escalate. I was a painfully sensitive and shy child, afraid of meeting strangers. I liked trees. They offered safety and solace where I couldn't be found. I learned early on never to go to my mother for anything, for I would be rebuffed. I was made to feel I was a nuisance, so I was truly a lost child who learned to be invisible, to have no needs, and who simply waited to grow up sufficiently to run away from hell, which I did at age 19 by marrying. Excelling at schoolwork seemed to be the only means to please my parents. I succeeded wildly. It reflected well on my mother, but it couldn't make her love me. Before ACA, I thought that the only really horrific thing that happened to me in childhood was being raped by my oldest brother. I was 8 or 9 years old. He was 7 years older. After luring me with the promise of $5 if I would undress, he used me as a prostitute to practice technique. Utter madness. I remember vividly the terror, the paralysis, the agony, the feeling I was surely going to die. And afterwards, I could tell no one. My deepest core knew my mother would have heaped shame and blame upon me. There was no safe person to tell and no protection for that child. The servants would surely have been fired to expose such a heinous family secret. At 9, I had to stand up alone to that brother, who was almost twice my age and strength and cunning, threatening to expose him to make sure he never touched me again and paid in full. Yet there's no amount of money in the world which should ever make me whole again. My wounded child carried her secret shame, making up stories that she must have brought this upon herself, that she was damaged goods, that she was a very bad girl, etc. She believed all the lies that sprung from imagining what shaming accusations her mother would have heaped upon her. She became alienated from her true self and cut off from her emotional life in the wake of losing her childhood, her innocence, her sexuality, her trust in humanity or God. She spiraled into existential despair and isolation. The false self took over, made everything look okay, tried to fit in. An adult child of an alcoholic was launched. I was safely invisible, especially to myself. The manifestations of my disease included overachievements in academics, retreat into an imaginary world of literature, immersion into creative endeavors, which provided my only voice and self-expression, development of an insatiable longing for beauty, modestly successful accomplishments in the world, and failed marriages to emotionally unavailable or sociopathic men. I relied on alcohol to medicate my moods. My children suffered from their parents' divorce and their parents' lack of parenting skills, each having come from alcoholic homes. I moved from crisis to crisis, struggling to merely endure life. My older son's horrifically angry emotional outbursts and self-destructive behaviors were similar to my mother's. And while my husband was going through bankruptcy, my younger son was born with a rare heart disease requiring multiple open-heart surgeries in the first few months of life, and life-threatening illnesses as he grew to adulthood. I fought for them like a lioness protecting her pride. Although I desperately wanted to break the chains of dysfunction and abuse, I unwittingly carpet-bombed my sons with so much of my disease. I sought out help from therapists, adoptive loving mothers, Al-Anon, AA, and finally ACA. Well into the journey, I literally ran smack into God, whom I had thought had forsaken me eons earlier. My younger son and I were driving on the interstate. He had just climbed into the back seat and gotten into a sleeping bag for a nap. He assured me that he was buckled in. Moments later, I saw a car crossing the median, speeding directly for us. There was no escape in rush hour traffic. I had no time to do anything to save our lives, and I was mad as hell, knowing we were going to die, taken out so young and so unfairly. With each vehicle racing toward the other at 75 miles per hour, the last sound I heard was a crunch of impact, then nothingness. When my eyes opened, all I could see was a yellow haze. Was this the proverbial tunnel? What a cliche. No, it was smoke rising around my airbag. I jumped out of the car and coaxed my son out. A crowd surrounded us. I heard someone say, "You are so lucky." I knew with all my being it was not luck. We had somehow been rescued. Someone or something had shown up for us. We were taken to the hospital and x-rayed from stem to stern. Neither of us had as much as a scratch. Yet the car was unrecognizable. It looked like it had been through a trash compactor. The wheels sheared off, no skin on the doors, no leather, just steel reinforcing beams. The engine block had landed in the front passenger seat that my son had vacated moments before the accident. It was too much to deny that we had been saved from death, so I started a search for the God that had eluded me for 40 years. My God had a great sense of comic irony. The other driver was a hopeless alcoholic. In Al-Anon, I was sponsoring an addict. I welcomed what she could teach me about the mindset of my older son, who was now living with his father and dealing and using all manner of drugs from home. When my sponsee told me one day that once you know the precise nature of the disease, that alcohol is deadly, you can never drink again the same. All of a sudden, I saw that alcohol was a common denominator in all the family madness and I knew I didn't want to die from it. I walked into the doors of AA the next day and never touched alcohol again. I had the luxury of quitting the drink before I had lost the choice to quit. Still, I had the isms and the centuries of family history of alcohol abuse, madness, and 4 generations of suicide, including the brother who had raped me. A fellow AA member led me into ACA just as I was emerging from the humbling nightmare of breast cancer. It seems highly probable that my cancer arose out of the toxic beliefs about myself that I developed as an ACA candidate. I knew after my first ACA meeting and the laundry list that I had finally found my home. All the previous work I had done had prepared me for this, the motherlode, the bedrock of my disease. I had or had experienced every item on the list. I devoured the Red Book, marveling at how they could have understood me so well. No longer did I feel like a freak of nature. I didn't have to suffer alone. I took over a year working the steps in the Yellow Book with a co-sponsor. It was finally safe to be me and expose my secrets and fears and defects that served me no longer, and awaken to my emotions. Now I had the loving family I'd always longed for, and strong female bonds for the first time. The work has been both exhilarating and the source of unimaginable grief and unimaginable breakthrough. A month ago, around the 3rd anniversary of my mother's death, old memories began surfacing, which before had no emotional content because I was so cut off from my feelings and my body. But with my ACA lens, these memories have shattered both my heart and my sense of self and most of my belief systems that provided me with the illusion of control and self-sufficiency. I have been in unrelenting emotional crisis as the program works me over. Had I known this is where I would be tonight, I can assure you I would have never volunteered to tell my story. The first recall was at the beach with my mother and youngest brother. I guess I was 6 or 7. They were on the shore and I was playing in the waves. I went out too deep, and when a large wave broke, I was sucked under by an undertow, sweeping me so powerfully that I could get neither a foothold or surface for air. It kept pushing me down. All the memories of my brief life flashed before me. I became increasingly panicked and oxygen deprived, fearing for my life as I battled to survive. Ultimately, the undercurrent spit me up onto the shore. As I recall, a lifeguard came to my rescue and led me back to my mother, who was reading her magazine and had witnessed none of the struggle. She promptly dismissed it and me and returned to her reading. By this age, I must have already been shut down by her daily neglect and disdain, and the event lay dormant in my subconscious for over 50 years. The second was another near drowning. I must have been 3 or 4 because I didn't know how to swim. The family was at the country club for Labor Day festivities. My mother would have been drinking like a fish and having a grand time as she always did in a party atmosphere. As she told the story, I fell into the deep end of the gargantuan swimming pool and was sinking toward the bottom when spotted by a man who dove in fully clothed to retrieve me. By her telling, she found the anecdote quite amusing. I think she, you know, it was like he ruined his suit. Whereas growing up, I just accepted her behavior because I had no choice. Today and for the past month, I have felt fury at her appalling lack of concern. My body screams out that she regularly practiced criminal neglect. My bones have been on fire since these memories surfaced, burning with rage. Every time I hear in my mind one of her witty, cutting quips, I want to slap her to the ground. The righteous anger that I was never allowed is flooding out of me. I have been weepy for weeks, feeling the sadness and the burden of carrying 60 years of pain inflicted with impunity by this monster. I feel raw, my insides eviscerated by the pain of rejection by my first love, a love that was never returned. She told me so. She had another daughter. I was dispensable. Once when she was putting me to bed, I wrapped my arms around her and told her how much I loved her. I remember vividly her stiffen and pull away from me. All my life, I've been drowning in neglect, starved for love and affection and an internal sense of safety and security. I'm angry at the unfairness of it all. Thanks to ACA, I can now claim for myself that I didn't deserve a mother like this. I didn't deserve to be imprinted with shame and low self-esteem and PTSD and depression and all the other traits, so that it was inevitable that I would come to make disastrous choices as an adult and likewise wound my children, who I adore, and somehow through all our struggles still love me. I'm belatedly feeling the hellacious agony of going it alone in self-will with a death grip on control. Acknowledging and feeling the pain is the first step. It wasn't until I realized that my mother would have happily allowed me to die, and actually I had always been dead to her, that my outrage allowed me to finally identify on an emotional basis with my inner child. Before, when I would look at pictures of my young me, I felt revulsed at her grumpy, fat self. I rejected her just as surely as my mother had. Now I can visualize and feel myself inside her life and death struggle in so many ordeals, terrorized, always alone against the universe with no help from the outside, because we never learned to ask for help or believe we deserved it. I feel her gnawing, oppressive isolation in a dark, dank prison cell void of any sound of life beyond. My personal holocaust. My inner child learned to believe before language that our world was unsafe and that she would have to struggle for survival alone. Of all the things my mother robbed me of, the greatest was the comfort of a loving God who would never leave me or abandon me. I weep for that child, and I want to become her loving parent and show her that those primal beliefs are no longer true. But to the extent that I, as an adult, have internalized my mother's beliefs and attitudes toward me, I am not yet a safe parent. I have been as punitive of myself as my mother ever was. I need to forgive both of us, and I may just be ready to do so. Perhaps forgiveness never gave lasting relief from the pain and resentments before, because I had bypassed all the deep feelings, the bodily sensations, and the grieving of so many losses. What is not acknowledged cannot be released. My greatest challenge is learning to love myself compassionately and unconditionally, and seeing myself as a beautiful creation of God that God intended me to be, when I'm being tortured with the messages of condemnation and I go into the God blackout and I want to die. How can I remember in those moments that God sees only my goodness? Somehow I must perfect that God consciousness and direct it toward myself and others. Love is my only way out. I'm beginning to believe that God was with me all along. I was just too spiritually dead to connect with Him. He didn't allow me to drown. He provided servants and strangers to protect my life. He gave me the strength to stand up to my brother, to see my sons through open-heart surgeries, addiction, estrangements, jail sentences. Today, my children are thriving and happy and self-supporting. Miracle of miracles. God allowed me to survive cancer and car wrecks. He gave me the heart to want to believe in the Christian message that I was brought up with, the desire to live my life as if it were true, to live in love, until I can believe that God has always loved me, forgiven me, accepted me just where I was, and has only wanted the best for me. And He wants me to ask for all I desire. All I have to do is believe this is true, and then call on God to manifest His promises in my life. What a deal. Still, my ego resists. It tells me that can't be true. It accuses me of every negative thing imaginable. Stop. And then it convinces me these negative beliefs and feelings are stored at the cellular level in my body. I've suffered back pain all my adult life, and what am I going to do about that? Shut up. I am told that the energy of emotions are 50,000 times stronger than the energy of thought. So if I'm to overcome the cellular subconscious emotions I've been imprinted with, not only from my mother, but from generations before, I need to have applied a loving energy for myself of unimaginable power, far greater than I alone can summon. Okay, this goes into the God box. Again and again, my overachieving ego and intellect fill me with anxiety and dread and expectation of punishment and more trauma and learned helplessness. I'm exhausted from the struggle. Surrender, 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 let go. God, can we please be finished living from the head? After the blackest of nights, when I felt I was too damaged and broken to ever be healed, that any last shred of sanity was unraveling, and that I was shrinking into nothingness, the still small voice of God spoke to me in the morning. I am not my story. Those things that happened are not who I am. I am life force. I am loved unconditionally. I have been given the spirit of power and love and sound mind. I am creative and healthy and have the wonderful support of ACA. I'm not altogether feeling it, but I'm believing anyway as the spiritual warfare rages on. My frontal lobe does not go softly into the night. Do I kill it with love and compassion and forgiveness and acceptance? God, can you help me out here? I can't. You can. Help me trust you. ACA tells me dying to self means surrendering my identity as a helplessly fear-driven little girl fighting for life in an unsafe and unprotected world. It means replacing this flawed belief system with a faith that God has always taken care of me. In fact, he has repeatedly put wildly unlikely and humble and seemingly powerless people in my life to save and protect my sons and me. None of them came from my zip code. I wouldn't have picked them out in a million years. And yet, here I am, home, so blessed and so grateful, and so full of love for each of you who are not your story, but diamonds lighting the universe.